Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Here today, blessed to have someone who everybody knows her images, but really, really hard to know the woman herself. Searched the internet, looked everywhere. Elusive. But no. Deborah Jones, the woman behind the lens for all Thomas Keller's cookbooks. I have Bouchon Bakery in front of me. Lovely, lovely book printed by Artisan.
Thank you, Michael.
Absurdly large book, too.
It's way big, yes.
Yeah.
I always tell people if they don't want to bake, they could have a good doorstop.
Yeah. Well, I use it, as I told you, a workout. To carry these things around, get some guns. Your career started out in Florida, traveled up the coast with your family a little bit. Was it always focused on photography?
My career, yeah, probably. As much as I know anything, I never really consciously meant to be a photographer. I collected Life magazine as a kid, saved my allowance for it. Asked my dad for the camera when I graduated from college or from high school, and he said, "Oh, I'll bring one home from the office. I'm sure it's a phase." And I think it probably is still a phase, but. You know, we were talking earlier about what are we going to do when we grow up.
Yeah.
I'm still looking for it. You know, I'm 158 years old now, and I'm still looking for it. And I just eventually sort of bounced around. I was living in D.C. just to get away from my family, taking a walk down K Street on my way to National Geographic because I was going to just ask them if I could clean their offices. You know, I wanted to be around images. I had no idea. I had no real training, went to junior college. That was about it because I had no kind of direction. It was a cold day in D.C. It was like 17 degrees, and I had my Georgia coat on. And I walked into a bank, and it was before Reagan, and it was okay, you know, to be in a bank and loiter and drink coffee and eat donuts. And someone came up to me and said, "Are you looking for the employment office?" And I felt guilty enough. I said, "Yes." And 2 years later... I left that bank when they offered me a VP, and suddenly I could see the rest of my life there. And I thought, I got to pull a Geographic. And I signed up for camera school at Brooks. I'd never been west of the Mississippi.
Brooks is in Santa Barbara.
Now, it's a different school now.
Yeah. I was recently out there, and just, you mean, like surrounding yourself around something that you love. I mean, the vistas, the land, the air in Santa Barbara must have been a welcome change, too.
It was in a way, but as an East Coast girl, the West Coast people were so slow.
It still hasn't changed, has it?
No, they're. I think they're.
And slow. Now I just lost all my listenership on the West Coast.
Well, it's beautiful in a lot of other ways. I'm still there. I'm in San Francisco now, and I absolutely love it. And it's. I've kind of lived all over the country, and the Bay Area is the only place I can live in this country anymore. You know, I wish I could be in New York more, yeah. But. It's a great place to live.
Santa Barbara, Brooks Institute, what was that formal education? What was that foundation that got you into the industry?
Brooks, as opposed to Art Center in LA at the time, those are sort of the two choices. And Brooks was a much more technical school. LA Art Center, I think, a little more rounded education, more art involved. And of course I was really interested in that, but I wanted to know everything technically so that none of that would hold me back. I was figuring I'd go and learn the art, but I didn't want any. I just wanted to know the technique, so I didn't have to think about it anymore.
Did you and I was about to call him TK, but I don't know if I'm allowed to because I haven't worked for him. Thomas Keller.
Yes.
I feel like reiterates this point often too: art versus craft. That you have to have the craft before you can create the art.
I totally always knew that somewhere in my, somewhere deep inside or from a past life, I knew that.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that resonated for me with Thomas when I first met him. I don't know how, this is I'll try to make this a fast story. I had done about 24 cookbooks before the French Laundry book option came up.
Squash.
Yes. a lot of Chronicle books, some HarperCollins books.
Tabletop linen books.
That too, yeah. Yeah. All cookbooks and tabletop books, still life and cookbook and food. But I had pretty much decided that I should start planting trees, and I had made my contribution to landfill. And
oh, I thought you were using that as a euphemism. No,
I was very serious.
Yeah.
I just felt like there was enough already. So when I got the call on the French Laundry book, I sort of dismissed it, and I sent them a few tear sheets left over from the workbook ads or something. And I guess Susie Heller at that point, the producer on the book, had like floor-to-ceiling portfolios from all over the country with nice suede backs and, you know, lovely presentations. And I sent a little envelope of prints. But they said, you know, wow, like you're different. Okay. And I went to talk to Thomas and I said, Chef, you know, why do you want to make a cookbook? Because honestly, I feel like we don't need another recipe for salsa. You know, I sort of feel like, I don't mean to be sarcastic, but I felt like no one was really doing anything different with cookbooks. They were all starting to look alike, and I felt like I didn't really have anything new to say. And he said, I don't disagree with you. People have been after me to do cookbooks for a long time, but I finally feel like I have something to say. And he started to talk to me about how you store your fish the way they swim in the ocean, because to store them on top of each other changes the texture of the flesh on the bottom. And I thought, oh, yes, you are so my kind of guy.
Yeah.
And we've kind of been in sync ever since.
Nothing new was happening in cookbooks, you say. But which ones were those legends? Which ones were those reference points that you went back to that changed the game?
Well, specifically on the French Laundry book, we all talked about several books that we liked, but we knew we didn't want to make one we had ever seen. So, you know, there was Thomas knows these names better than I do. There was a Michelle Bross book, I think.
Yeah.
And they were mostly European books.
Yeah. Were there American books? I mean,
yeah,
it's funny. Everyone references, you know, Jacques Pepin, La Technique.
Right.
Which came out, I think, in 71 as the book to have as a chef in the U.S. But there weren't many U.S. cookbooks that...
Charlie Trotter was doing some nice ones, but they were starting to feel like they fit into a little formula. There were several, and I'm sorry, I can't remember those names. I should have taken some notes.
No, well, it's actually kind of nice that you don't, because it's a jumping off point to try to figure out what you did differently.
Well, but we just didn't know. I mean, I remember a first meeting sitting in Thomas's dining room. There were six or eight of us, and I had two sous chefs. Mark Hopper is one who's now doing a restaurant in Northern California, Farm Shop, and Grant Ackett's. And Grant and Mark were Thomas's sous chefs that we started the French Laundry book with. So the three of them and a designer and myself, we were sitting around talking, and Michael Ruhlman, who was writing it. And Thomas looked at me and goes, well, how do we do this? And I was like, Chef, I don't really know. I think I didn't even know to call him Chef then. I think, or maybe that's all I called him, and now I just call him Thomas. But I said, I don't really know. I said, you're going to have to make some food. I'm going to have to look at it. And that was just sort of where we went. And I was shooting film. That whole book was in film, most of it with a Hasselblad. And I would bring the light box and the loop in, and Thomas's favorite thing was on, you know, the next time when we came, because he had, I gave him his own loop and he wore it around his neck like a trophy. You know, we were all looking at images and the transparencies. It was alive and it was fun and it was exciting. And we were just shooting. And, you know, when you're in the old days, when you shot film, you didn't see anything, you know, so you just kept going and just listened to yourself and sort of trusted that you were seeing something. And nobody got stuck, like, looking at it and wanting to rearrange anything. It was a much more fluid motion then.
You're saying you didn't see anything, but you did see something.
No, I mean, you didn't look at things. You know, now we, everybody take an image and everybody's looking at the screen.
Yeah.
And reacting to the image instead of, I'm just looking through the camera and feeling it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's serious. It sounds really hokey, but if you look at the tomato long enough and listen to it, it'll tell you what to do.
Well, I think that comes from a daylight photographer, too, as I am.
Yeah.
And, I mean, then why daylight? Coming from a school where you had that technical foundation, why did you strip it of the studio? Why did you strip it of, you know, all the equipment and elements that you can introduce into a shoot, control it?
Well, you know different ways to achieve what you're looking for when you have all of those tools, right? So the daylight itself, I find that food has much more color from the sun than any amount of special bron color lighting I can buy. That it just, I mean, I love my bron color lights, no question about it. I totally know how to use them. But the sun has, they just respond to each other differently. The red from that tomato is different with the sun.
And it's free.
Well, it's free, but it's beautiful,
yeah.
You know, and to me, honestly, it's so full of surprises. And I think some of my best work comes from just the surprises that happen that don't necessarily happen in your studio.
So actually, let's talk about your studio and the surprises that came from that. You're in San Francisco now,
mm-hmm.
but where did you shoot the French Laundry cookbook?
We shot most of that in Thomas's house and in his backyard.
Yeah.
And around the French Laundry.
So what were some of those surprises, some of those unexpected images that came out of it?
Now you're putting me on the spot. I haven't looked at that book in a while. You know, the sun would just come around, or a chef, for example, would be walking from one kitchen to another, and I would see something go by, and I was like, what was that? You know, and it was like, can I see that tray? Can I just bring that over here? And it would just be like, you know, a half-baked sheet of apricots or something, just getting prepped. But it was gorgeous. So, it was, you know, I wouldn't have known to ask for it, but I was there, so I saw it. You know, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's funny, getting a shot list these days for cookbooks, or for any assignment, it's often the things outside of that shot list which move you a little bit more.
Yeah, the shot list is like a suggestion to me. You know, it's like, these are things you have to make sure you
cover.
Should
we be saying this in front of publishers?
Well, actually, I'd like to say a lot of things to publishers.
Yeah.
Are they listening?
Oh, yeah. No, tell them. Tell it like it is.
You know, I actually think that that one of the big successes of Thomas's books is Anne Bramson at Artisan letting the team do what they do. And Thomas, as a chef, letting the people he brings into the fold do what they do. Susie Heller as producer encouraged us constantly, you know, railroaded us, kind of corralled us maybe, kept us on track, but never questioned why I was looking at that pile of mustard. You know, everyone looked to each, you know, Michael Ruhlman wrote, Cliff and Dave from Level designed that book, and no one micromanaged anybody. So in a way, we were all kind of free to do what we do, and I think that it kind of made us all like at the best of our game. You know, no one was holding us back. And we were all just learning how to walk together in the same direction. But not, you know, no one needed to walk on top of each other.
Yeah.
So that's like a message to me that I wish more people understood.
And that was 1999. So you've walked a long way with Thomas now.
Yes.
How many cookbooks?
I've had a lot of meals with him.
Yeah.
We've done five of these.
French Laundry, Bouchon, Under Pressure,
mm-hmm.
Ad Hoc, Bouchon Bakery, which right. is in front of me right now.
Is that five?
Five.
Yeah.
Maybe there's one that's happening that I don't know of yet.
No, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I think we should take a little break.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about the progression too, because you have a very specific point of view, and it is yours, and it is defined by what you've done in the past, as well as photos being a reference point for people to cook Thomas's dishes. Has anything changed over the five books in how you approach an image, how you project an aesthetic?
No, not over a time period. I'd say that each book has given me a different challenge. As far as the French Laundry book, shooting that was a very obvious thing. It had its own culture. We decided to shoot the culture of the French Laundry, shoot the far-reaching ingredients at that point. So we went to Ingrid in Maine for her sourcing of mussels. We went to Hearts of Palm John in Hawaii for, you know, his Hearts of Palm forest, and in between. And that was really important to talk about for Thomas, because those were things that he couldn't get anywhere else that were huge. And then just the culture of the service and the place is so specific. So that book was obvious. And then the Bouchon, the Bistro book came up, and I said, you know, well, we can't make it look just a boring, it's just a bistro. Why don't we go to France, and why don't we shoot that stuff in black and white? That was also film. So, you know, and Thomas says, okay, we'll go to Lyon. I said, perfect. You know, let's go eat trotters and then show them the difference between, you know, where the inspiration came from. So that's how that Bouchon book came. And then Under Pressure came up, and I was really freaking out because it's stainless steel and plastic, right?
Two of the most excellent and most reflective materials.
Beautiful food-friendly materials. So Under Pressure, to people who don't know the book, is the sous vide method of cooking. And it's more of a manual for professional. It's more of a professional book, honestly. Although at that point, Thomas thought, oh, I know the sous vide machines are going to be the next Cuisinarts in kitchens. That's still debatable. But that was really like, okay, there's no culture here. There's no restaurant I can shoot. There's no any kind of place. There's no sense of place for it. So how do we do that? And we just said, well, let's just take everything away then. And I just put up a black surface and hung some plastic and lit it. That was not daylight, because we had to really control the situation. And it turned out that was my most fun book, honestly. It was just sculpture. I was just shooting sculpture.
We're going to take a quick break and actually come back and discuss Ad Hoc at Home. Bring Thomas Keller into your own kitchen. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. Yo, it's Michael Harlan Turkel here with Deborah Jones, photographer extraordinaire of the Thomas Keller Collection, and that much more. And it's funny, I referenced squash before. You know, a single element, but randomly.
There were single subject books, and squash was one of them.
But single subject versus environment. You know, you just mentioned Under Pressure, saying that there was no environment, there was no place. And you had to construct that, make it sculptural. Mm-hmm. Whereas Ad Hoc at Home, there also wasn't really a place, even though it was at ad hoc, it was about doing these larger family-style things and
right.
taking it out of the restaurant setting. How did you construct that?
Well, the restaurant ad hoc itself, which, you know, the story is it was supposed to be a temporary restaurant, but it became a little too popular, and they made it a permanent restaurant, at least for now. It's still ongoing. The experiment continues. So we shot some stuff at Ad Hoc. I went back to Daylight for that book. We shot some work there at the restaurant, which is a very casual restaurant, and that's how the food is served, family style. So that kind of just determined the rest of it. But it didn't, you know, it didn't want to be a restaurant book per se. We shot a lot of it in my studio, which at that point was a bigger studio and had like 8 windows, 4x8-foot windows that face west and 5 that face south. So we had everything on wheels, and we just rolled around and so, followed the light.
Can we just talk about how great okay. Southwest light is?
Love it.
Because when
painters can have northern, I'll take every southwest corner.
And people
in the
think
city.
I'm crazy because, like, I literally know the city well enough that what's odd, what's even, what mm-hmm. side of the street. I'm like, is that southwest light? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, no, it isn't. I know, and I want my southwest light. I want 2 windows. And I'm not being that crazy artist.
No, like, you're not. I gave a compass to a realtor once because they kept giving me places that had the wrong light. Seriously.
Yeah.
And skylights. Fuck skylights. Sorry.
I told you, you're allowed. Fuck skylight. Every time I see a skylight, I'm going to put my fist in the air and say, fuck you, skylight.
I mean, they're nice to live with, but don't give me one to shoot. Well, we should stay on topic. We should talk. We should have dinner.
Okay, yeah. We're cursed more outside of the studio. But creating an at-home environment at a restaurant.
Well, that was easy. It was easy because Ad Hoc, the restaurant itself, is very casual. So we just took, you know, part of my work. I mean, I have no objectivity about what I see or what my style is or any of that. But I do realize at this point that I just take things away from the set. Like, we may start with, you know, the stylist wants to put all this shit in, and, you know, chefs want to bring everything, and I just start pulling them away, so that basically what's there is just the main actor, you know, and a few supporting actors. I mean, when I teach a little bit, I talk about that, like, you know, figure out what it is you want to say. Who's the star on the shot? You know, what's important? Like, I'm looking at this table, my glass of water is going to be the star. Then I'm going to compose that way and don't fight it. Don't put a bunch of shit coming in here to, like, confuse me.
Well, I mean,
so I just take things away, and then it becomes kind of simple.
I mean, I do want to talk about props, too, because, you know, that is an important part of the shoot, having those elements to be able to incorporate.
Having the right ones.
Yeah.
Right.
So what do you want? What do you look for? If it's so sparse, there must be something specific to each shot.
Well, yeah, but I don't know that ahead of time. I'm a very intuitive shooter. I cannot sit at a meeting and tell you what we need. I mean, my experience can tell you a lot of things that won't work, but I kind of just know that. You know, I know 1,000 ways it won't work, which in a lot of ways gets me closer to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want something that, I mean, props, focus, lighting, they're all compositional tools. You know, no one of them makes or breaks a shot. You know, your point of view with the lens determines, you know, how you're going to see the element. You know, if I'm going to, like, have a more editorial moment where I'm walking by this table and I see a casual glass of water and a dirty napkin, that's one thing. If I'm down low looking up at this glass, I'm really heroing it. You know, I'm looking through it. I'm going to concentrate more on what's inside it. So as far as choosing the right prop, you just, again, find, like, that great backup band, you know, those backup dancers. You know, they don't upstage the star, but they contribute to the story. I guess that's part of it.
I mean, let's look at the cover of Bouchon Bakery. That alone, I mean, the cookie is gorgeous, and I've had it many times. That's the peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
What is it
called? The better nutter. Better nutter.
The butter nutter.
Better.
Better. Glass of milk half drank. That beautiful candy striped straw, a simple white linen, and a dark wooden tone tabletop and background. I mean, it's so sparse, so elemental, and so emblematic.
Nice words, Michael. I had no idea.
But how did you put this together? I mean, how did you know that this was the way this shot was going to end up?
Okay, first of all, we had no idea it was a cover. It was just the Nutter, the Better Nutter cookie that we were shooting. And I was like, okay, first of all, okay, this is 300, this book is 300 images for people who haven't seen it, 300 images of brown round things. Right? You've got dough, you've got your muffins, you've got your bouchons, you've got your tarts, you've got your cookies. And it just, every chapter is another brown and round thing, shade of brown. So to come up with something new that often and not make it look, you know, to be able to actually accent the brown butter and flour over and over again, I really decided that it needed to be a darker book because that dark stuff could pop off of it. And in some, you know, in most cases, Michael's flipping through the pages now. In most cases, you see that the brown, the food is popping off of a surface. So we just, you know, if I, it's one of those, if you can't beat them, join them. So just make it, it's all brown, let's make it brown.
It's funny because, you know, from a chef's perspective, it's a color, texture, composition. And often it's contrasting, not complementary.
Exactly. Exactly. Or, you know, how do you see chocolate? You know, you can see it against white, but if you have a whole lot of white, you're never going to find the chocolate in there. But you have a darker subject, then it's usually the highlights that our eyes go to first when we look on a page. Or the most distinction, I think. So, you know, for me, it's like, okay, just let that background recede, so let's make it darker.
Let's also talk about the surfaces, because there is a lot of dark wood, but what's great about the Thomas Keller cookbooks are that there's instruction, you know, true instruction too. It doesn't seem like some fantastical play, some kitchen that is completely inaccessible to the home cook.
I'm glad you see that.
And I'm looking at like a...
That's the Silpat.
Yeah, right? the Perry Breath, the Paris to New York.
Right.
That it is. Yeah, on the Silpat.
It's such a Silpat. I use parchment paper, wax paper. I use the back of sheet pans. They're beautiful surfaces.
Oh yeah, I carry on sheet pans. They're my reflectors. They're my
they're reflectors. Trays. They're back pans. They're everything. Pot lids. You know, they all work.
Yeah,
but it's just about being authentic to me. You know, I just want to use something that's really there. Like for me, I just want to tell the truth. So I'm not going to do a lot of artificial things to the food or to the set or create a lot of story making fireworks when you really just want to taste. You know, the image. I mean, to me, I don't know. It kind of goes back to a more philosophical question. What's the point of a cookbook? You know, yeah, they're instructive and informative and entertaining. But to me, I always want to just make you want to eat it. You know, I want it to be delicious. I want it to be evocative of some kind of more visceral experience with food. Because, I mean, I got stuck shooting food because I think it's a really universal truth, you know?
You say stuck, though.
Well, I mean, I can't get out of it. It's a happy problem, no question. But I do. I think that food is a universal truth. And it's, you know, it's in so many cultures, it's a way we share with people. It's a way we worship it. We, you know, we all need it, obviously. It's, you know, it goes to the altar. It's a gift, you know, and I just want to, like, honor it. So I don't want to do a lot of stuff to it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Jack, I'm sure, is tagging and quoting that whole thing, and that's going up on our page. That may be our new mantra.
Oh, phew.
But you say these things. You told me that you shared a lot of meals with Thomas. Mm-hmm. What informs you on how to, you know, show this food? Is it having eaten it first? Is having gone through the process of actually photographing and interacting with it? How do you represent it? How do you show that truth and be true to it? I mean, it's a scary proposition because this is what people are using as their reference point to cook these recipes. And you have to do that justice for yourself, for the chef. It just feels like a lot of responsibility.
Well, I think I think that's just my training as a commercial photographer, honestly. You know, my job is to translate what it is the client, what their speaking point is of the product. You know, if I'm shooting wine for someone and it's a crisp, white, refreshing wine, I'm going to shoot it in a different way than I'm going to shoot the velvety, chocolatey, syrupy Syrah, right? So it's more about looking at the product and knowing what its strength is and knowing what it's trying to say. And I think just bringing that out, not getting in its way, but just making it have room to come forward.
Obviously, with those descriptors, I know that you know wine and you know food, but do you have to know food to shoot food?
I think it helps. I think you see a lot of women, ironically, shooting really beautiful food in the last 10, 15 years. And I just think because we've kind of grown up being, I don't know if it's a sensitivity. I don't know if it's just more familiarity. I'm not sure. But I think knowing food helps. I think, I think people who shoot fashion, who know fashion, shoot it better. So I think it's just about being educated about your job.
And how well do you know food? Do you cook? Do you interact?
I cook. I sort of have learned through osmosis. I can't stand following recipes. I'm not a baker.
Yeah.
I'll read a cookbook and just say, oh yeah, what about that? You know, or I like going to the farmer's market and just buying food and going home and making it. I love the barbecue. You know, I throw anything on the grill.
Yeah.
Fava beans, you name it, whatever.
Grilled fava beans are
tender.
Amazing.
The young fava beans, a little olive oil, throw them on the grill and eat them while you're cooking the rest of the dinner. It's perfect.
I was just introduced to that by Chris Cosentino last year and blew my mind.
You don't have to blanch them and peel them and all that junk.
So other techniques, because that's such a small part of what these books are. You know, sometimes you see oysters and pearls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Thomas is one of his signature dishes, and you think you have to cook that whole thing. But there are certain aspects of each dish, too, that are exemplary. What are a couple of those techniques that you've used and maybe incorporated into your cooking life?
Let's see. Salting has been something I've really learned from him. And working clean is another one. That I love.
That is so important, both the food and photography.
It is. It was also something. I was always kind of going in that direction in my own little photo world, never in my kitchen. And when I learned that from Thomas, it just all of a sudden the light bulb went on in my brain. It made perfect sense. You know, I could see so much better everything if I kept it clean. So now I like running through the studio. Housekeeping, you know, like, meaning clean that table, please. I can't find anything.
You did say something about crumbs, about not wanting things sterile. That, you know, an image can be tack sharp, but it doesn't have to be pristine.
Right. A lot of times the crumbs will happen and everybody goes to sweep them up and I just say leave them. And more likely than putting a crumb in a place, like I see those images and I was like, oh, what are you, like, trying to draw a constellation here? I mean, more often, I will just leave the mess and take one or two pieces away and just leave the rest. So, you know, when it's there, it's because it was really there. And it was because the piece really fell that way. It's not because, you know, I mean, sometimes we're adding salt. It's like people want to put salt on with tweezers. I'm like, please, just, and I just, like, take a few hands and throw a pinch full and throw it down.
Yeah.
And then you take away the ones that are in the way. But just it's a more organic process.
Subtractive rather than additive photography.
I'm going to be a sculptor in my next life.
Yeah.
I just want to like chisel.
You mean in this life? You haven't figured out what you're doing yet.
I just like taking things away. It's like, did you ever work in a dark room? Black and white dark room?
Oh, I was like that last generation that still had analog.
Right. So, you know, in the dark room, you're burning and dodging constantly. And that's what I do on the set with light. I can really get on the soapbox about not, you know, using Photoshop to finish your photos.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I say, look at the set, look at what you're doing and put your contrast in your set. Don't do it in Photoshop, you know, make it in your photograph.
So what are the best ways to introduce that other than just having great southwesterly light?
Oh, well, you know, the opposite of a white card, you know, you've got too much light, you start putting up black cards. It's like you just subtract the light. You know, I've had, like, you go into a fluorescent kitchen where you have no direction at all, and you take a few black cards and make a little tint, and you have one little side of fluorescent light coming through, and suddenly you color correct for it, and it's beautiful. Don't have to, like, go in with 10 C-stands and 5 assistants and change everything.
Yeah. No, people think I'm crazy when they walk in with, you know, like four pieces of foam core.
Yeah.
You know, one side black, one side white. But it is, again, stripping it down to those elements. I mean, those control.
And get the gold and silver, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those are like my, I should have brought you one. Those are like my favorite,
I think
favorite
I got
thing.
Those on my reflector, but they look a little too disco for me sometimes.
Yeah, but if it's a really soft light and you use one, it just gives you a little more contrast. You know, it's like a mirror, but a little flatter.
Yeah.
I first started, I found that from the bottom of a bakery tart, you know, liner. It was like somebody threw it in the garbage can and said, wait, look at that. You know, that's a great light source. So now you just like, everything is a light source. I had an assistant who came in the studio one day and said, I really want to work with you. I heard you light with garbage can lids. So, well, if it's closer than the C-stand that somebody has to go get to do this, blah, blah, blah. Paper towel rolls, favorite tool.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, they just stand up by themselves, beautiful little fill card.
Yeah, you just told me that you work clean, but now I can see garbage can lids, paper towel. It looks like you're... Have everything strewn about.
But no, they're not strewn about, though. They're just, you know, selectively used whenever. They're not all at the same time. Not at all, you know. It's just that they're close by. You know, tape on the set drives me crazy. But fold a piece of paper and it stands up by itself and done. You know, you don't have to wait for people to go find the tape and put it down. And, you know, meanwhile, your cilantro's dying. You go wait for all, you know, to get all the photo tools when they're all just standing right here in front of you. It's a lot of common sense, but we get in our way about finding the common sense.
And all this applies to food too.
Absolutely. You know, I think chefs have so many tools now, so they could just be totally confused with which tool to use. But, you know, using their brain and their hands are probably the best tools they have. Their eyes, their taste buds, whatever. And their hearts. I mean, chefs, I'll tell you, another reason I'm staying in the food world is that chefs are some of the most generous people I've ever met. I mean, is that your experience?
Oh, I wouldn't be here otherwise.
You know, it's, well, Thomas is probably the most generous man I know. But in general, chefs, they're like those hunting dogs. They just keep bringing you things. You know, they can't stop. They can't, right? You know, It's wonderful. It's fun. It's contagious. And it makes me want to give more. And then, you know, we all go home with bigger hearts. And isn't that kind of the point of living?
I'll let everybody else answer that for themselves.
Sorry.
I mean, I'm
getting too esoteric.
No, not at all. I completely agree. And again, we're writing that up. A new mantra for Heritage Radio Network. But Deborah, thank you. I mean, this is a career that I only hope to be able to, you know, have for myself. That you've created not just, you know, this amazing library of work, but this mindset of approaching that work.
Oh, good.
You know, should be accolades abound.
Well, let's keep the dialogue going.
Please.
And I think what you guys are doing is great.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad I found this, and I'm going to subscribe and going to tell California about it.
Heck yeah.
All right. It's a
manifest
cool little
destiny
thing.
Moving out west. Thank you again, Deborah.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing my new workout book, Sean Bakery. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
It's the Grow NYC Market Update.